Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Two Cups of Tea. I'm Chris Heath, and I've got the best job in podcasting, because I get to stick the kettle on, crack open the biscuits, and listen to some amazing life stories from older legends. Today, I've realised I've been making the podcast for 6 months, so it seems like a perfect time to do the first Best Of show. So, in today's show, you'll hear all kinds of stories, including hilarious tales of romantic dachshunds, shy comedians, female impersonators, midnight horse theft, new dinner parties, accidental kitchen graffiti, dangerous deeds in New York City, dancing queens, dashing dads, true love at first sight, and heartbreak during wartime. Never let it be said the older generation is boring. The first person you're going to hear from is 95-year-old Jessie talking about her astonishing experiences manning the anti-aircraft guns during the Second World War. Right, I'll stick the kettle on, you listen to the cheesy theme music. Let's do this.
I'm just about 19. And I went, and there was a recruiting office. And I walked in, and I said, I want to join the ATS. And they said, are you sure? I mean, it's a big thing to do, said this lady. And I said, no, I've thought about it before, and I would like to do that.
And so for people who don't know, what does ATS stand for? And what was the ATS?
It's the Auxiliary Territorial Service, not anytime sergeant.
Was that the that was the naughty name for it, wasn't it?
Oh, there were worse ones than that. Yeah, and it was the army, and my dad was thrilled. God, he said, I think you will get on great, he said, because you'd like you're good with people.
Mm. And I said, so he's proud of you.
Yeah, oh, I was the person who won the war, didn't you know? Where? Jess is there, and Jess has been there, and Jess is doing this. And of course.
Oh, you mean that's what he was like when he was telling other people the stories?
Yeah.
Oh,
but of course,
him.
I couldn't tell him things I would have liked to have told, because there were things you didn't talk about.
Oh, but there's nothing lovelier than a proud dad, is there?
Oh.
So what was it like when you first got there?
I took to it like a duck to water, because I was used to working with people, and I wasn't shy. I should have been, but I wasn't. I loved it. I really did. Mm. Even when it was awful, I loved it, because you felt you were doing something back.
Did you used to have drill practice the same as
every
well?
Every day. We marched more than an hour's marching drill every day.
Yeah.
Absolutely every day. And we marched with the men and stride out and straighten your backs and hold your bloody heads up, which you do.
Mm. And is that what the drill sergeants used to shout?
I suppose I can tell you. They used to say, open your legs. You've got nothing left to lose.
I imagine you grow up pretty quick when you go somewhere like that.
You are treated exactly like the men. There were no concessions, none at all.
Yeah.
None at all. You look like a bunch of pregnant virgins. I never worked that one out.
I don't understand that one either. That's quite hard to get.
But we learned to march. And years after, about 4 years after, when we broke up, when the war ended and we broke up and went into another unit, the sergeant major came into the NAFI.
Mm.
And he was upset because he was being posted as well, obviously. And he said, I'll tell you this, he said. You girls have done me proud. He said, you march. I was proud of the way you marched. I wouldn't tell you before, he said, but you march like the men. You can march the men off the parade ground. And my friend said, well, I wish you'd told us. You've been rotten to us for the last 4 years. And he said, well, he said, if I'd told you how good you were, you wouldn't have tried so hard, would you?
Well, he's right, isn't he, I suppose?
Well, you say, we'll show him. Yeah, I know. We could do those difficult manoeuvres like you see on parade in the army.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, we were treated. There were no concessions, none at all, yeah.
Katika, have you got a question for Jessie? She would like to know what you and the other girls did in the evenings.
Oh, there was always... Well, you've got all your cleaning to do for the next day. Your boots, your gaiters... The buttons.
So at some point you'll have been posted properly. Did you get any time home?
A full month. And then you could decide what you wanted to do after that. You could be a driver, you could be a cook, you could be a goodness. Oh, there's loads of jobs, telephonists, all kinds of things, and ACAC. And I thought, I'd like to do something like that. Because I knew then that you might get a few moves.
What was ACAC?
Anti-aircraft, that's all. And then we went to Arborfield near Reading and we learned all the things about anti-aircraft and we had to learn everything to do with guns as we could possibly could. And then a month after that, we went onto the Norfolk coast and we had practice with real guns, with real ammunition. And then we were posted to a proper gun site. Then we went to Hull, which was the worst bombed city I'd ever seen in Britain. When we went to Hull, we took out straight over from the men. And one of them said, it's bloody all here. You girls will never stick it here. You never get a night's sleep. You never get a day's rest. There's bombs and there's machine guns, he says, and there's action all the time. Hmm. You girls will last 3 weeks and you'll be asking for posting. Well, we lasted a bit longer. We lasted 10 months.
Well, it sounds like they underestimated you, didn't they?
They haven't got a clue. They said, look, they're doing our jobs. And when we took over, we said, look, they're doing our jobs. Yeah.
This is 85-year-old Tommy talking about an old cigarette factory and a famous comedian.
I think the IHO's senior service, they used to be manufactured in Cheetah Mill in Manchester. That's where their factory was.
Oh, is it?
Yes, used to be in... And my sister...
So right near Strangeways?
Right near Derbyshire. But it just... Oh, I love senior service.
It's a taste of home.
Yeah, yes, I think it probably was. It might have been... I didn't realise until you
said it. I bet it's a taste of home.
Yeah, and just a matter of interest, she worked alongside Bernard Manning. Because Bernard worked, when he was a 14-year-old boy, he started work
at senior service
factory. Well, it was called Patio's, but he was senior service. Yeah, Bernard started there.
Did she have any stories about him?
He said he was a very shy boy.
That's interesting.
Very shy.
Because he's the opposite. He became the opposite.
Absolutely. The shyness, going back to my own, so I started work at 14, and, of course, at that age, I went into a big factory, you are the butt of a joke, particularly from the women that work in the factory.
Oh.
You are the young boy.
Because they know you're inexperienced, they can make you blush.
They tease you. And I think that's what was happening with Bernard. They teased him.
Yeah.
And of course...
I bet they have a bet on who can make you blush the most.
Yes, that sort of thing. Something a bit beyond that as well, but never mind that. And I became quite friendly with Bernard over the years because he was a little bit older than me, but we just teamed up together. I used to sing in the choir at church, and then when I started drinking, I used to sing in clubs and that sort of thing.
Did you?
Yeah. Not so much. Well, you all do your party piece on the Saturday night.
So everyone had their own song.
Absolutely.
So what was yours?
Bye Bye Blackbird in F. I always
you've got to know because you've got to tell the pianist.
Yeah, I always say that. I said, I never knew, I tell this story to people, I said, I never knew Bye Bye Blackbird, the key was F. And I said, it was Bernard Manning that said to me, you know, Tommy, when you sing that song, you must see it in F. And I would say, now, when Bernard said F, he means F, you know. I like Bernard, yeah. I got on well with Bernard. When we go to the embassy club, come on, Tommy, you better song, you know.
Next is Gloria talking about her dancing days during the war.
I had been to a few church dances, very staid affairs, in bare holes, wooden seats, horrible, when you look back on them, horrible wartime, dingy places.
Yeah.
Anyway, we went to the Continental.
Was it as grand as it sounded?
Oh, it was gorgeous. I thought I'd died and gone to heaven because it was chandelier. There were chandeliers. It was a great big hall. Mirrors everywhere, all with gold around them. It was reminiscent now, I suppose, of the 20s.
Yes.
That's sort of, well, it was a 20s place, probably.
Yeah.
And not only that, it was full of men who had no partners. No wallflowers in those days at all.
Yeah.
And I no sooner took off my coat and went in there. I took it in the cloakroom. They gave me a ticket. Well, before, we'd sort of all hung them all up in a side place in these church halls.
Oh, and in the dingy ones.
But this gorgeous bright glass chandeliers were absolutely gorgeous.
So what kind of music was it and what kind of dances were they?
Oh, ballroom dancing. Because it was Continental, in the smaller places, the dives more,
yeah,
you had lots of Americans and Canadians who jived and jitterbug,
yeah,
but you weren't allowed to do that. You'd come up, your finger wagged at you if you were trying to do anything more than waltz.
Yeah.
But I loved the waltz. I loved them all.
What were the local lads like about the influx of American soldiers?
Oh, they hated them.
Did they?
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't have very many of our own servicemen here, it seemed to me, although we were a garrison town, we had the citadel with the army. They were all outnumbered. There were so many other nationalities. There were Poles, New Zealanders, Australia, not the French, which I was pleased about. I didn't like getting on buses when French were there because they always smelled of a sort of a pomade thing with their hair.
Oh, that pomade kind of, yeah.
Well, that night I went there with the boys from next door.
Mm.
There was this very young, shy American, and he kept trying to dance with me. But the thing was, when I went into that ballroom, you had a, and as with every girl, as soon as the girl came in, they'd all rush up and say, can I have this dance for you? The first dance, can I have the second? You were booked ahead like that.
Did you have an actual dance card?
No.
I had to remember.
I could have done. No, I didn't remember. They had to. There were so many there. They all looked the same to me. You're all in a uniform. And at that time, you know, I was just astounded when I walked in. I was still overcome by all these lights. And so you started to dance, but it was taken for granted. If someone came and tapped him on the shoulder, excuse me, then you moved on with that one. So you didn't get around the dance floor with one partner, possibly four before you did it, before you rounded it. It was just all right if you were just wanting to meet people very casually, but if you wanted to have a talk, and I always wanted to have a talk. And that was a bit frustrating, really.
And this is Brenda talking about her disappointing dachshund.
Blaise of St. Ives.
Well, that sounds like a proper
male.
Yeah.
That he was expensive, black and tan, miniature of beauty. But again, he was spoiled by the children and Lou. And
but not by you.
No, because I put him outside to do his business and I didn't clean up after him, you know. But he was a lovely dog and children loved him.
Yeah.
Well, someone from a nearby town heard that we had this pedigree Blaise of St. Ives that was highly sought after.
I see.
And they came to see us and said, would we allow our dog to mate with their bitch?
Yeah.
We said yes. You can have the pick of the litter. So they brought their dog over, beautiful brown female dachshund.
Yeah.
Well, Blaise took one look at that dog, that bit, went up the stairs under the bed and didn't come out. He didn't like the dog. He was frightened of her.
Yeah.
So we didn't think there was much chance of them mating.
Yeah.
So I had a friend next door named Phyllis, and she was wonderful.
Yeah.
And she came over one day, and she got the broom and got this dog from under, my dog from under the bed.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't the female. I mean, she was raring to go. It was just my dog.
Your wussy little dog.
And in the hallway was my son's sports bag.
Right.
So we put this female in the sports bag.
You didn't.
And we put Blaise in the bag behind her and held the handles together. And anyway, and I couldn't do anything for laughing. And Phyllis said, come on, get on with it.
So there's just the two heads sticking out one end.
No, they had, and anyway, it did the trick. But when it was all over, well, while this was going on, there was a knock on my front door.
Yeah, it was probably the police.
No, and I opened the door and it was a man come to read the meter. And he said, he laughed. And he said, when... and Phyllis said, and my friend Phil, I loved her. She was lovely. And she said, go on, get on with it. Read the meter. We've got something going on here. And he said, I've seen some things when I've been going to houses, but never anything like this. And he left, and it was all over. I guess it did the trick, and Blaise got out and zoom straight up the stairs under the bed again.
Yeah, what I would say, Brenda, is if you locked me in a hold all, I would have done the same bloody thing.
I told Kim, and he said, I'm not going to use that bloody bag again.
Yeah.
This is Joe talking about his days as a female impersonator on the cabaret circuit in Manchester.
I started doing an act in the clubs.
You did?
All round Manchester with another couple.
Yeah.
And we did a mime act.
Well, is this on the club circuit?
The club circuit in all Manchester area, Greater Manchester.
So there was you and who else in the act?
And Bill and May.
Yeah.
May was a lady.
Yeah.
And Bill and I. And we mimed to... there were multiple records in those days.
Right.
And there's a few tapes and things of people, famous people, you know.
Yeah.
And we impersonated them. But we did, we were miming it.
So you had to learn.
Had to learn.
To learn the whole speech of the different
the
people.
Whole thing. Yeah, learn the song, mime it. We used to practice in front of a huge mirror.
Oh, like the ones you get in dance studios.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
And we practice and practice until you're absolutely perfect. Then we used to do female impersonations.
Oh, you did? Or
yeah,
just?
I did, yes.
Well.
I can show you a photograph.
Is that illegal?
Yeah, it is. And we used to do all the clubs and things. And the act, we used to do a lot of quick changes.
Yeah.
You know, you go on as two men and a woman.
Yeah.
And the next time you came on, there were three women. And the next time you came on, there were three men.
So did the audience think that they had 15, 20 people backstage?
Yes, they did. Because I remember in one club where the dressing room was up some stairs.
Yeah.
And when we'd finished, you know, that everybody had gone home.
Yeah.
As we thought. And we were coming down to the dressing room, coming down the stairs with the cases, you know, your costume.
Yeah.
There's this crowd of people. And they said, where are all the others? Where are they? There was three of us. They thought there was loads of people.
How brilliant.
In the show, you know.
My next question is, you've got a very elegant bone structure. Did you make a pretty lady?
Oh, yes. Definitely. Were you? I could show you a photograph.
As proof?
I want to prove.
Did you ever, was there ever any mix-ups when anyone thought, when everyone thought, you know, that you were available and also a woman?
I'll tell you a wonderful story. We were in this club doing our act, and we used to do the Beverly Sisters.
Oh, yes.
And I was the one in the middle, Joy Beverly.
Makes sense.
You know. And this particular night, my mother and father came to see us. We were doing this Beverly Sisters thing.
Mm.
And father went up to the bar, and there was a bloke there, and he was talking to him. And he said, I'll tell you what, he said, I wouldn't mind taking her home, the one in the middle. He said, you'd have a bloody fit, mate. That's my eldest son. And the bloke walked out of the club. He went.
There's no coming back from that, though, is there? There's nothing you could... He did the only thing he could do, and that's just leave.
Yeah.
That's the most dignified thing you can do at that point.
I know, but... I know.
What kind of people did you...
Well, we used to do... Bill and I used to do... Bing Crosby and Judy Garland.
Who was Bill? Who was Judy? Who was Bing?
Judy.
So you were Judy?
With the hat on. Yeah. You know, the wig and everything. May used to do Winifred Atwell on the piano. That was brilliant.
Brilliant.
They used to set the piano on the stage.
Yeah.
So that the audience couldn't see her hands.
Oh, got it. So
and
you just.
She'd be playing, you know, what she used to play. And everybody thought she was playing the piano. She wasn't really. And she used to do a good Gracie Fields. She was great as Gracie Fields.
Yeah.
And one particular night, her husband, David, used to work the machine, you know, the records and things.
Yeah.
And he'd had quite a few during the night.
Oh, so many good stories start that
she
way.
She goes on, and it was George Formby singing Leaning on a Lamp.
Did she carry on?
Yeah, just really not wrong.
Oh, my God.
But it was marvellous. Yeah, it was really funny, that was.
So did you and May ever argue about who was going to be which woman?
No, we never did. She was a lot older than I was. In fact, her son... was in my class at school.
Wow!
When I was at school, yeah, she had two sons. Oh, and her other son came to work in the engraving when I, because I was still working in the engraving, you know.
Oh, all the time you were. What was the name of the act, by the way?
The Gay Deceivers.
The Gay Deceivers.
The Gay Deceivers. I mean, it wouldn't get away with that, I don't think, nowadays. Well, I don't know. We might, but. Okay, to see you. That's what we were called.
That sounds fantastic, though. What a brilliant act. How did you all find each other?
Well, you see, like I said, I used to be in pantos.
Oh, right.
In pantomimes. And Bill, this was at the... I used to go to a chapel, and we used to have a drama society, and we used to put on a Christmas panto.
Mm.
And I used to play the dame in the panto.
So that's where it started.
That's where it started, you see. And Bill used to go to the parish church, and they used to put a panto on. He used to produce it. And sometimes he played the dame in this panto. You know, that's how it was.
So did you all have day jobs? What was Bill's and May's?
Bill worked for the... He'd been in the RAF, and he worked for the RAF.
Yeah.
He did some kind of office work or something like that. And May was just a housewife.
Yeah.
With three kids, you know.
And did you ever get any stick at work, you know, about the fact you got dressed up as women and did the club stuff?
No. No, I don't remember anybody saying that.
I wonder if Bill got any at the RAF.
Oh, I don't know. He probably did.
Yeah.
I remember it was we went to the RAF club where he was a member of.
Yeah.
And we did a charity show there. It was a variety show with different acts.
Yeah.
There was a juggler on and also a stripper.
Oh, hello.
And the stripper shared the dressing room with us, which, I mean...
All girls together.
And there was I didn't know about this, really. You know, she just came in and said, oh, I have to share with you. And I said, all right. And there's a mirror, and I'm doing the makeup. And I looked through the mirror, and there she was, took a bra off and stuck two tassels on the end of her. She went.
And how old were you?
That'd be about 18 or 19.
Blimey. Well, there's, I tell you what, it sounds like an education.
It was an education.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. I know.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
His mooring on her days as an evacuee in rural Wales.
And we went to Edge Lane Station. There was a steam train. There was loads of children with their gas masks and everything, all excited to think we were going on this fantastic weekend. So off we go and we get to Prestatyn.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was Prestatyn then to begin with. And we go into this field where there's all tents. We hadn't been there a quarter of an hour when we were standing by the gate and there was two other little girls with us. There was four of us, Audrey and I and Kathleen and Mary.
Yeah.
They were older than us, slightly older. And this car comes in and it had a figure on the front and it was a big black car. And the lady comes out of it. There was a man driving it with a dark clothes on. And this lady jumps out of the car and she had a flouncy dress on, like it's chiffon and eau de bain, with flowers on and a big hat.
Yeah.
And she said, I'll have these four little girls. It was us standing because we were in that place. And it was these two, my sister and I. And we were taken, we were the first to be picked just because of the position we were in. A bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She said, I'll have these four little girls.
Obviously, you look the loveliest, is what I would say.
I don't know about that. But anyhow, we got in the car.
Yeah.
And they...
That makes it sound like a car boot sale.
I know. It was ridiculous, really. They were just picking who they wanted. But we were the first. Now, my cousin who went was evacuated said he was the last and most people were the last.
Oh, no one wants to be the last,
I know, but
he
said most people aren't because I always said we were the first. Don't think he believed me, but it was absolutely true. Yeah. My sister would confirm. But her memory's not quite as good as mine, really.
Yeah.
She was younger.
Right, yes.
So there's parts she doesn't...
Of course, yeah.
But I remember and she doesn't. And... we were taken to this gorgeous house in Marine Drive in Prestatyn, huge house. We wondered what we'd come to because we'd come from a terraced house in Liverpool. And we go in and we were in like a little sitting room and there was a breakfast room. I mean, it was so big and this big garden and we went out in the garden. The next morning, that was Saturday, and then they said,
you can crayon in the other room. So we sat craning, and this man who'd been driving the car came in, and he had a striped waistcoat and another jacket over it. I think he was a driver or a butler. I don't think it was her husband.
Wow.
Didn't get a chance to really...
So he looked like staff.
He looked like a staff.
Yeah.
And he said, your breakfast is ready. We went in and we had this fantastic breakfast.
Yeah.
A real fry up and everything, toast. And then they took us out somewhere. I can't remember where we went, but they took us out somewhere in the car. Bought us an ice cream. And then on the Sunday when we came down for breakfast, she was crying. And she said...
This is the woman in the big flouncy chiffon dress.
Yes. Yeah. She was crying. She said, we've got something to tell you. We've got to leave our house. The war has started. So that was the third on the Sunday.
So what did she say? That
she said she had to leave her house and go to the country. They were obviously quite wealthy.
Right.
The soldiers were having her house. Does that sound feasible?
Yes, they would have been billeted.
Yes.
Yeah.
The soldiers had to have a house, she said. We had to, and we had to go. So the soldiers...
Well, a big house like that, I imagine, had lots of spare rooms.
And she probably had other properties, see?
Yeah.
And they were going to somewhere...
So she had the option.
They couldn't take us out of that area, evidently. Well, I would think so. I would think we would come with the school. We would have to stay in that area.
Right, yeah, that makes sense. Because you'd all go back on the same coach or whatever.
Well, we would have done. We never got back for 4 years.
4 years you were there?
Terrible.
So from what age to what age were you there? You were
7 to 11.
That's such a big part of your
it
childhood.
Was terrible. Yeah, I think we were deprived a lot, really. We were deprived terrifically after the third move.
So where after you went from
then the
posh lady,
yes,
where did you go next?
We then went to a family in Caradoc Road in Prestatyn.
Mm.
And they were Michael and Mary, very friendly.
Mm.
He had the donkeys on the beach.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That must have seemed like a dream.
Well, it did, but we never got washed, you see. We were playing mud pies all day and we never got washed and we were as black as coal and what we'd come with disappeared, really, because it was put on their little girl. They had Mary and Michael as well. They called the children the same names as them.
Right.
And we all slept in one bed. And I wet the bed, obviously, and he wet the bed. So you can imagine the state was by 2 weeks and we'd never been washed. And a little, as we moved, the day after we moved, a lady came and we were playing in the garden.
Yeah.
It was just mud. It wasn't a garden, really.
Right, yeah.
It was just mud and we were making mud pies.
Right.
And this lady came and she said, I'm writing to your mother, what shall I say? And I said, I want to go home. She said, well, you can't, the war started. I can remember, I'm sure she was a health visitor and I ended up a health visitor.
Really?
Yeah, strange, really. She said, you can't, there's a war on. So off she goes. Well, she came back.
I bet
back.
You were nicer when you were a health visitor than she was.
Yeah, she was, but very nice. Anyhow, 2 weeks later, she comes back.
Yeah.
Must have been suspicious of something. And we weren't badly treated. We were fed.
Mm.
But they got us up one night, and my sister was a bit frightened because he was shooting peas. He was having his dinner across the table. And her being that much younger, she was a bit nervous about him. And they took us to the mountains, and I think up the hills, up the mountains, near Gwaneska, a little village. And I think they stole a horse. I just had a feeling that there was something involved there.
Oh, so it was a midnight flit to go and steal a horse
and
then come
back? Yes, I think they did.
Can you remember what the homecoming was like when you came back for good?
Oh, yes. My sister said to me, what will we call my mother? She didn't know what to call her.
Oh, bless her heart.
Yeah, what will we call her? And I said, oh, Mum. And she said, oh, want to call her Mrs. P, like we call Mrs. Pierce.
Oh.
She just couldn't get there. But we didn't. I mean, the homecoming was nice because we and my father always said, you came home like little mice, but you didn't last that long like that.
And this is John talking about some disastrous DIY.
About that time, after the war, my mother said, I want the kitchen decorated, you see. So my dad said, well, I suppose it looks as if it does. So she said, well, I'm going out shopping on Saturday, so John can decorate the kitchen. I said, yes. So she said, I've cleaned it. I've put all the things away and I've covered them all up. So he said...
So you'll have been about 12 by this
point. I would have been about 11 or 12.
Yeah.
I might be a bit younger, anyway. Mm. And he said, I tell you what, son, he said, I've got a stirrup pump. And he said, so,
a stirrup pump. Yeah,
you put it in a bucket of water and you pump like that. And out at the end came the water. You see, spread out. So we got, my dad said, he went and got a big bucket of distemper, which is like paint, you know, paint. Anyway, so we kept it all up in the kitchen. And he said, now you pump, I'll hold the end. So he started, I started pumping, but instead of having it on spray, he had it on jet.
Oh, my God.
Wow. And he got it on to spray. And I've never heard my dad swear, but he said, pump you, pump. Couldn't pump it laughing. I was absolutely creased up. And there was distemper everywhere.
Oh, my God.
All everything. And even the hole in the floor where the mat used to go, it was all up. And my mum came back. She's livid. She shut the door. So we didn't. So.
Well, arguably, it did look different than before.
It did look different. So did everything else.
Yeah.
And here's Jessie again talking about the day she received some heartbreaking news.
So, while all this was going on with you, and you were keeping Belgium safe after keeping Hull safe and Britain safe,
tried to.
Where was Jim posted?
Jim had been sent he wanted to get married so much before we went away, before he went out. He knew he was going to the north, to the Middle East. So he went to, he was sent to Tunisia.
Mm.
Four months. Mm. We were married for 4 months.
Mm.
And one day I said, no, I've not heard from Jim for 3 weeks. Somebody said, you're wanted in the battery office. I thought, oh, God, what have I done? I don't think I've done anything wrong. And there was one of the officers with a letter in her hand.
Mm.
And she said, this just came from you, to you, from records. And it said, it is my painful duty to inform you of the death in action of your husband. On 25th of April 19 this year, last month, and I said, can't be.
Mm.
And I said, there was his name, his number, 150-7435. I still remember it.
Mm-hmm.
I said, excuse me. I remember saying that. Excuse me. I said, I want to be on my own about this.
Mm.
And I went and sat in the old. What's the name again?
The nothing.
I went and sat in the so-called restroom, and I looked at nothing. Can't be true. I'm not seeing this. And one of the officers came in and just with a cup of tea. She said, "I'm terribly, terribly sorry, Winkworth. There's not a thing we can do, but it's a cup of tea, and you'll be hearing from the office."
Mm.
And they gave me a leave, a ticket, and I just went back home. And I didn't cry for weeks. I didn't cry at all. It was just too bad.
Mm.
It was too bad. I couldn't take it in. My dad was lovely, but I didn't want to upset him. So I said, it's all right. I can cope with this. I've got to.
Mm.
And so I did. And I went back to work, got back with it, and I thought, well, there's nothing I can do. So I carried on the same, just the same. And I still wear his engagement ring.
Back
when I was 18.
Oh, and it's beautiful too.
I wear that. I wear that, my engagement ring, all the time.
Mm.
This is Barry talking about his swinging days in 1960s Sydney.
And in fact, at that time, I shared a flat with two New Zealand girls who were, shall we say, rugby is not the national sport of New Zealand. Let me put it that way.
I'm afraid I know what you're talking about.
You don't know what I'm talking about?
No, I'm afraid I do.
Rugby is not the national sport of New Zealand. And I lived with these two lovely ladies, and they came along and invited a few friends, and there was a certain amount of nudity went on. Yeah, we gave Ray a good party. It was at the time in Sydney when the first topless lady appeared at Bondi Beach. horror, shock, horror, drama. And the next week there were 20 of them. The next week there were 100. And suddenly nudity in Sydney became sort of blasé. People had nude cocktail parties and nude dinner parties. And I was a bachelor for 10 years between marriages over this period.
Yeah.
I'll leave you to the rest of your imagination.
Okay.
So all these ladies came along, and I say there was a certain amount of nudity. No one minded. We didn't object, put it that way. And after a little while, I was doing this cooking, and in there walked this lady, and it was Christine.
Yeah.
We just looked at each other, and it was like two trains colliding. And that was it.
That's how it should be, isn't it?
That was it. She walked up to me, and she stood up here and looked in my eyes. And said, "Hello, I'm Christine. Who are you?" I said, "I'm Barry. I'm lovely to see you." And she was a stunningly beautiful creature. She was 20, she was 14 years younger than I.
Mm.
I was approaching 40. She was 26, 25 at that time.
Mm.
We were together a year before we married. She had auburn hair, long hair, and she was wearing a figure-hugging red dress, which I still have upstairs. It's the only item of her clothing that I can't get rid of.
Yeah.
But that was it. We were together that night and forever afterwards.
And here's some more vintage Brenda talking about her late husband, Arturo.
I always said I had three children instead of two because he was like a third child.
Oh, really?
Yes. I used to buy toys for the children and he used to get upset if he couldn't play with them. He was an excellent father.
Yeah.
Excellent. He loved them dearly.
Yeah.
Nothing was too much trouble. He wanted them to study. He wanted them to take care of themselves and to keep their rooms clean and...
But it sounds like sometimes it could be a soft touch too. Is that right?
Oh, believe me. You know, when we first went to America, we stayed in New York for about 4 days while my husband went to pick up a car.
Mm.
He came back, and because it was so hot, it was August, I needed some hats for the children and different things. And we went to a large, never in my life seen a store like it.
Mm.
To buy some hats. And he said, "I'll stay in the car, you go in and buy the hats." Mm. So I did. And when I came out, because I was in there some time, I bought sheets and, oh, it was heaven. I'd never seen anything like that.
And you were uninterrupted as well. You could go and look at what you wanted.
That was my first experience in an American store.
Mm.
Anyway, I was in there some time. When I came out, the children had sweets, a book, different things, and I said, "Where did you get the money from to buy those things?" And in such a straight face, he looked at me and said, "Would you believe I found $20 in the car park?" I mean, what do you say? What do you say?
Brenda, did you believe he found $20 in the car park?
No, of course I didn't. Yeah, he was good. I miss him to this day.
Yeah, of course.
I do. Christmas has never been the same without him.
This is Michael talking about his favourite childhood toy.
So you're now five or six, and you're now at school. I mean, did you have any favourite toys that were the things that you most remembered and you most liked playing with?
I had a thing called Snoopy Sniffer, and it was a mechanical dog.
Yes.
That used to sort of go up and down when you went after you went. It was a clockwork thing.
I imagine it would.
It was a metal thing. I remember my...
Snoopy Sniffer.
Okay. I'm sure if you Google it...
Did it go on a track? I'm going to Google it now. Did it go on a track?
No, it would just go on anywhere.
Right. Snoopy Sniffer.
Yeah. That's it.
There he is.
Look at Snoopy. And the tail used to go boing, because it was on a metal twangy thing. You know, and it used to just go up and down like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
Like a bride's nightie.
Here's Dorothy telling me about her lovely dad.
On a Sunday night, my Aunt Lizzie had come up to look after me while my Uncle Charlie and my dad went out. Now, my father, when he was dressed up, he always had a trilby hat on and a Mac over his arm.
Wow.
Wherever he went. And he was 6 foot, you know, he was a big man.
Yeah.
And they'd go in a pub where they're not known. They'd walk him and my Uncle Charlie, piano lid would go down. Then my dad had sidled his way up. I could just imagine him. Mm. And in half an hour, my Uncle Charlie would be at the up there, and my father would be singing, "Come to me while I tell you of the Spaniard, the blighted man." And they'd be on free beer for the rest of the night.
And finally, Felix on Dangerous Pursuits in New York.
So when you were a kid, were you like, you know, were you tough?
I was very slender.
Yeah.
Very slender, very slim. And I was exercising all the time. I used to love to swim.
Mm. Where did you swim?
We used to go swimming, I think it was 155th Street. Swimming baths called High Bridge. And we used to either hitch on the bus, get on top of the bus, on the back of the bus, or a lorry, and get there. Or we used to put our skates on and do the same thing, but just hang on to the bus. Or...
So you used to tow, you used to get towed by... Did they know you were on the back of the...
So I'm sure they've probably seen it. You know? And we used to get, sometimes we felt brave and it wasn't really a lot of traffic on Madison Avenue. We used to get behind a car and hang on to the bumper of the car, crouch down, right, and go as far as we could on that particular vehicle, and then just reach over and hang on to the other one.
And switch cars in mid.
And we used to bet who can get to 125th Street the fastest.
Wow.
And I used to say, I hope my mother's friends or my mother doesn't see me.
Can you imagine
that was
if you...
stupid.
Yeah.
I can say that now.
Yeah, that was stupid.
Yeah, I can say that now.
And there you go. As you'll have just heard, this podcast is about sharing some fantastic life stories. But there are well over a million chronically lonely people in the UK who have no one to share their stories with. If you'd like to know more about ways to change this, then please go online and visit campaigntoendloneliness.org and find out how together we can make loneliness a thing of the past. Thanks again to all the guests I've had on the show so far, and also thanks to Acast for hosting the show. We'll be back with a brand new interview in a fortnight's time. See you then.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.